If you left off last week, we were discussing with Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish raises a question about the very way that many, many women do Esotara. The Chazon Ish said the whole goal of Esotara is to try to prove to us that the bleeding has stopped. The problem is that if a woman does Esotara and the bleeding in fact is not stopped, it's almost stopped. So she realizes that this particular Esotara was no good. We have another hour till Shkia. So I'll wait 2 minutes. I'll try another one. And that one's also no good. And she waits another 2 minutes. There's another one. By the time she gets this 10th Esotara in, there's not going to be no blood left. So the Chazon Ish thought that was a joke. He said, that's not proof of anything. That just proves that whatever little bit of blood that minute was removed, but there's going to be more blood 5 minutes later. So the Chazon Ish said, that can't be Esotara. In order for Esotara to be acceptable, it has to be that there's a certain window of time that has elapsed that you gave the body a chance to potentially bleed, and now you prove that it hasn't actually been bleeding. So if you just do multiple Esotara one after another, that's not going to be acceptable. For this reason, the Chazon Ish said also that if a woman washes herself, she sits in the bath, and then 2 minutes later she comes out and does the Esotara, that's not a proof of anything either. So you have to give the body a chance to restart again, and then do a bedika, and if and when that bedika comes out clean, then do you know for a fact that Esotara is accepted. The Achronim have a lot of issues with this Chazon Ish, because this Chazon Ish with the Minhag Yisrael is that women do multiple Esotaras. We don't find that there was such an existence. In the earlier poskim, we don't find that there was any red flag raised about these multiple Esotaras. We get the impression that it was okay. There was nothing, somehow nobody was Mesiaches. Before the Chazon Ish came along, nobody seemed to be Mesiaches to this problem. So what do we do with that piece of information? On the one hand, the Chazon Ish's svara seems to be very compelling. On the other hand, we don't seem to find such a minhag exists. We don't seem to find any debate. It is a fairly common issue. How come nobody in the Chazon Ish raised this question? So the Sefer Badi HaShulchan, written in our generation, by Fivel Kohn, so the Sefer Badi HaShulchan suggests that the reason why the Olam isn't really concerned with the Chazon Ish is because of the following. So that's about the Yeshulchan, we'll talk about this a little bit later on, that even though the Mishnah, the Gemara, talks about doing the Esotara, and the Igra then is, as long as a woman checks herself sometime before Shkia, that's acceptable as Esotara. There is a minhag that women have to do what's called a moch. A moch means that right before Shkia, after she finishes Esotara, she takes another bedika cloth, inserts it into that area, and leaves it there for Ben Hashmashah. She leaves it there until Tzeis Kechavim, depending on what you think Tzeis Kechavim, there was no less touch here, how long Tzeis Kechavim is, but you leave it there for a certain amount of time, and then she takes it out, a half hour, 40 minutes, whatever the time is, later, she takes it out, and she sees there's nothing on it. That's the ultimate Esotara. Now that requirement of the Mocha, we're going to see, is not an absolute requirement, it's a minhag. It has its roots in the Gemara. We'll talk about it, hopefully, a week or two. So we'll talk a little bit about where that minhag came from. Sometimes the Mocha is required, Me'ikra did, most of the time it's not, most of the time it's a minhag. So says the Badi Shulchan that since a woman is probably going to be doing a moch anyway, so then the whole concern of the Chazon Ish doesn't really apply. The Chazon Ish's concern was that the Esotara that she's doing is a fake Esotara. She checked herself at 5 o'clock and there was blood. She checked herself at 5:02 and there's no blood, that doesn't prove anything. So he writes, says the Badi Shulchan, if that's all she does, is check herself at 5:02 and no blood and call it a day, that's a problem. But then at 5:05, she's going to put a bedika cloth inside and leave it there for half an hour. Says the Badi HaShulchan, if you leave it there for a half hour, then you're giving the body a chance to restart again, to potentially bleed again, and it's still not bleeding, she's still not seeing anything, that's a riot that Esotara really was good. So the Badi HaShulchan says the reason why nobody was concerned with the Chazon Ish, even though the Chazon Ish made a lot of sense, because since we, our minhag is, if we do a moch, the moch is almost a built-in guarantee that the Esotara will be an authentic Esotara. That's what the Badi HaShulchan's defense. On the one hand, we accept the Chazon Ish theory, but in practice, we don't really follow it. We let women do multiple Esotaras one after another because she's always going to have the backup insurance policy of the moch. So it's hard, unless the Chazon Ish was only addressing that woman who wasn't doing the moch, because it's not the Igra, then the problem, the issue with the Shulchan is that not all women do mochs. The poskim are very, very mindful about telling a woman that she doesn't always have to do a moch. Since the whole moch is 99.99% of the time only the Torah's minhag, not the Torah's din, therefore the poskim are very lax and say if a woman has irritations, it's hard for her. That a lot of women end up lamaisa not doing mochs for one reason or another. So according to what the Badi HaShulchan is saying, the whole whole Chazon Ish can only be deflected because of the moch. You have to take a case by case, but if this particular woman really did a moch or not. So Rav Avadi Yosef, in his Sefer Taras Havayis, has a different approach to the Chazon Ish. He claims that the Chazon Ish never said it. He said it as Beferish. He says, but look at the context the Chazon Ish was talking about. So I don't think I had this part in the Mamakamas. The Chazon Ish was not talking about standard woman doing an Esek Tara. The Chazon Ish happened to be talking about a specific case where there was a woman who had some problem. She had a certain condition that the bleeding was, she would stop bleeding, and then she would start upstanding again. Stop and start, she had these problems coming to Ora. She knows that, and again, it wasn't an issue of a mach. A mach would be another story that we spoke about last week. She had uterine bleeding, and it just couldn't come to an absolute clean stop. So she was having multiple post the actual period, still sightings of blood. Rabbi Yosef writes, that's what the Chazon Ish was concerned with, because if she knows for a fact that she's the type of a person who stops and starts and stops and stops and stops, so she's going to play a game, I stop, 5:02 I stop, but at 5:03 I'm going to start here, I'm not going to look anymore, 5:03, as long as I did 15 bedikas one after another, and the first 14 were awesome, but the 15th was mutter, so I'm okay. So says Rabbi Yosef, that's a joke. But we talk about a regular woman doesn't have. The regular woman usually comes to the end. Like at the end of day 5, the end of day 6, day 7, things are winding down. And she does a medika, 20 minutes before Shkia. And there's not a lot of blood, but mashu, usually what happens, a little drop of something, a little questionable color, 20 minutes before Shkia. So says, good, so wait a minute, and do another one a minute later, and you'll be okay. The only time the Chazon Ish was concerned, you can't play this game of finding that unique window of opportunity, was a woman who's mufzekas b'kach to have problems. A woman doesn't have any chazapas, she's a regular woman, so then she can assume, as long as she did a bedika 30 seconds ago, and it was usar, she could do another one again, and she doesn't have to be concerned. So when all the dust settles, both the Badi Shulchan as well as Rav Avadya almost end up being makel against the Chazon Ish. Either because according to the Badi Shulchan, she's probably going to be doing a moch anyway, or because according to Rav Avadya, so for most women, this whole issue doesn't apply. But with all said and done, we're still in the back of our minds, we're a little bit nervous about this Chazon Ish's concern. So therefore, we, again, depends who we are, but there are many poskim who recommend, especially a woman who's not doing a moch anyway, we recommend there be a little bit of a break between the Hesek Tara. So if a woman is doing Hesek Tara at 5 o'clock and it turns out to be Asar, so we wouldn't run and tell her, go do another one at 5:01. Wait a little bit of a window of opportunity. The question is, how long is this window? The Chazon Ish doesn't mention the time on the clock. He just says you can't just do one after another. You have to have a break. But unfortunately, the Sefer doesn't say how long that break has to be. And again, we're not as concerned about the Chazon Ish as we were before, because either because the Badi Shul is going to save us with the Moch, or Rabbi Lach is going to save us with Hishtikul Torah. So we're not absolutely convinced that this is a real problem. But the Chazon Ish, we try to time Hesek Tara that we don't have multiple one after another. So how long should that window of opportunity be? So it wasn't really in print how long this window was supposed to be. So I'll tell you the following background to the story. So when I first learned the sugya, so I saw this Chazon Ish, the shulchan, all the pilgrim and everything. So I was thinking to myself, nice, how long should we, well, what should we call it as this window? So I almost wanted to instant my own window. I come with an objective. It's very hard to tell women, wait a little bit of time. You can't tell a young cow, wait a little bit of time. You have to tell her. The olden days, people would watch it, people would look at it. So you would say, tell a person, wait a little bit. As man is there, yeah, I gotta tell you, tachlis, you know, we have to quantify what we do. You have to give an exact amount, how many minutes you have to wait. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a true about a related topic, we'll talk about it a little bit later on. When you talk about counting of Shivanikiyim, so the halacha requires, the Mishnah says, a woman has to do bedikas, she has to check herself each day of Shivanikiyim. So Rav Moshe has a discussion, one of the women just took a bath, and now she wants to do a bedikas right when she comes out of the bath. So Moshe says, that's a jump. What kind of bedikah is that? The purpose of bedikah is to make sure there's nothing there. If you just took a bath, so whatever was there just got washed away. So Moshe says, you can't do that. You have to wait a little bit of time. So Moshe, in the middle of it, she throws out another 15 minutes. She says, wait, when you come out of the bath, I'll wait 15 minutes before you do bedikah. So hopefully when we talk about Shivanikiyim, we'll talk about what that means exactly. That really applies, not really apply, what the parameters of that are. So Moshe throws out that number 15 minutes. So I was thinking to myself, it's not the same topic. The Moshe is talking about Shivanikiyim bedikas, the Chazon Ish is talking about Hesek Taras, but I thought that there's a little bit of the same type of an idea, that the idea is to give the body a little bit of a chance to, in a sense, prove itself. So again, not the same, bedikas of Shivanikiyim, so it's pros and cons, which is Mochomer, but Lemais is not the exact same topic. It is a similar idea. So I thought the stuff, that's what we should plug into the Chazanish. If I'm looking for it to quantify the time of the Chazanish, so I would tell women they should wait 15 minutes. So that's why I used to always tell women that the optimal time to do a Hefzitara is about a half hour before Shkia. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Why, on the one hand, when we do Hefzitara, we want to do it later in the day, because the Mishnah says you're not supposed to really do Hefzitara early in the day, because we want it to be as close to the beginning of the Shiva Kiyam as possible. On the other hand, we don't want it to be too late, because if it's too late, then she's going to miss Shkia. So we want to give her a little bit of a window. So I don't recommend that a woman should do a Hefzitara 2 minutes before Shkia. Because if you aim for 2 minutes before Shkia, you're losing two things. First of all, you may goof. You'll get a phone call at that moment. You're going to miss Shkia. That's number one. And number two, if you do it 2 minutes before Shkia and it's no good, you're not going to have any time to react. You're not going to have any time to revamp and to wait a little bit. So I always tell them to wait a little bit. So I almost made up myself the number half hour. Why? I said, first of all, it gives you a little bit of a buffer, a little bit of a window. And number two, it opens up the possibility to potentially do two more. Because if you do a half hour before Shkia, and if it didn't go well, so then you wait 15 minutes. Lishi Tafsi, because I just made up the number 15 minutes. So it gives you 15 minutes to wait. And then if that doesn't go well, so it gives you 30 minutes. And you have another almost 15 minutes. If you do three Hefzitaras in the course of a half hour, and they're all no good, do yourself a bit, wait, don't irritate yourself, your body's not ready yet. So I always thought that was a good compromise. I used to tell women, it's probably written in the English of those Nida notes, to tell the Collins, try. Again, it's not written in stone, and it doesn't say it's halacha moshe sinai. It was just an approximate number that makes it a little bit easier for women. Again, if a woman's in work, she's in the subway, she's stuck in traffic, so she wants to do before. Okay, that's fine. But if all else is equal, she's home and everything is relaxed. So then approximately half hour before Shkia is an eitzah, not a zalach, is a good eitzah. That way you can juggle this chazanish. So I was working with this idea for 15 minutes. So remember, after that I was telling people this for a couple of years, so I was talking to Rabbi Willig about this chazanish, and I asked them, what does this say in terms of quantifying this chazanish? If you follow this chazanish's idea, you should wait a little bit. So how long should you wait? So I just, in passing, I said to him, I recommend the women to wait like 15 minutes. So those who know Rabbi Willig, he gave me one of those faces, he says, 15 minutes? He says, 15 minutes, that's a long time. So I said, I said to him, I don't have any other number. It wasn't like a halacha, it was just, it was an eighth of time for 15 minutes. So I said to him, so Rabbi, how long do you say? So looks at me, says, looks at me, and then, 2 minutes. I said, suppose 4 minutes, 2 minutes, but again, these are not real numbers. These are numbers that the idea is to wait a little bit. It shouldn't be momish. What? One is down, top another, doesn't make any sense. There should be a little bit of a break. So I still tell them to do Hefzitara half hour for the first reason, because I still think it gives them a little bit of a buffer zone. But between you and me, if a woman tells me that she did Hefzitara and it wasn't good, she still has a few minutes before Shkia, I'll tell her, wait 2 minutes, 2 minute roll, wait, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes, as much as you can, and get in the second Hefzitara before Shkia and call it a day. So again, this is all assuming like the Chazanish. If the woman's doing a mof, then we're significantly more megel, because you always have to buy your shulchan to back you up. And the back pocket, you always have Rabbi Vanti Yosef, who said the whole thing wasn't really true for most women anyway. So we're not as concerned about this issue altogether. So now we move on to the next major topic. We're still continuing in terms of Hefzitara, but now we touch upon something that's going to touch not only Hefzitara, it's going to touch on Bedikas in general, Bedikas which are going to become a major role in the actual counting of the Shemekiyim. And the question becomes, Bedikas play such a major role in Hilchos Nida. They appear in the Mishnayos and the end of Masechet Nida. Many, many sugyos in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch about Bedikas. Strangely enough, it's very hard to define what exactly a Bedikas is. Just how much is a woman supposed to be Bodek as Atzba? Now, we know what a Bedikas involves, taking a Bedikas cloth and inserting it into that area, but it's very unclear just exactly how thorough this Bedikas is supposed to be in order to qualify as a Bedikas. Now again, we need it for Hefzitara. We need it, we're going to need it later on for Bedikas of Shiva Nikiyam. What exactly is this Bedikas all about? So Chazal use the word Bedikas, but they don't give you a description hands on as to what exactly this Bedikas is supposed to do. How do you go about practically, physically doing it? So here we have an example of a sugya in Hilchos Nida. We mentioned in the past that much of a Masechet Nida is not Lamaisa. Much of a Masechet Nida has to do with too much Nida. and there are significant parts of Masechet Nida, obviously, that are all Maisa, but many, many sugars in Masechet Nida are about Tumah V'Tahara of Nida. But every once in a while, we find other areas of Halacha, every once in a while, a main part of Halacha, the Maisa, is tucked away in a sugya that's not Maisa at all. So if a person takes the attitude, they're only going to learn the Isla Baila part of Masechet Nida, not going to touch on the Tumah V'Tahara, they're going to be missing big chunks of Hilchos Nida. So this is a classic example where the entire discussion of the Rishon about what a Bedikah is, has its roots in a technical Tumah V'Tahara part of Nida. We don't even observe this matter at all, but everything we're going to talk about in terms of what a Bedikah is rooted in a sugya in the first parak of Masechet Nida. So we have to learn through the background to that sugya. It's on page 32 towards the bottom. So it's the opening Mishnah in Masechet Nida, Shammai Omer, the Beis and Manav, the seventh of Ramakobos on page 32. Shammai Omer, Kol Anoshim Dayan Shaitan. Tana Shammai himself, Roshiva of Beis Shammai himself said, that all women are dying shaitan. That means that whenever a woman begins to see, she can assume that's when the bleeding started. She doesn't have to assume anything happened in the past. So who cares what something happened in the past? So this is a big enough commitment in terms of Tumah V'Tahara. Let's say a woman, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, all of a sudden realizes that she's starting to bleed. So does she have to be concerned that if she would have looked earlier, maybe she would have noticed earlier, and she just got finished touching a carbon, she just got finished touching truma, she just got finished touching taras, do we have to declare that all the stuff that she was coming is coming to mafreya? Or can you assume that nothing happened until now? Now is when from here on in she becomes a surah. So Shammai makes a statement called Nashim Dayan Shaitan, that she can assume that the whole problem begins from here on in. Up until now, the Gemara explains she has what's called a chazoka. She has a chazoka meikar. She follows the status quo. She was tahora until this point, and nothing has to be concerned about the past. Hillel says no. Mipkida lepkida, v'afil liyam harbei. That she has to assume that she was in fact bleeding in the past. She can't just close her eyes and say, "Well, only 3 o'clock. I don't have a problem." Obviously, you started to bleed at 5 to 3. Obviously, you started at 2:45. You must have started earlier than that. At what point can she say that she's certain that she wasn't bleeding before? The last bedika that she made, the pekida lepekida. Now, why in the world was she doing bedikas? She was muteris all along. What's she doing bedikas for? So these are bedikas of taharas that the Mishnayos described in the days of the Beis Hamikdash when they used to eat taharas. So a woman wanted to be very careful that she's not becoming a needle in all of everything. Yeah, she's preparing the Korban Pesach. Preparing the food, she's cooking the truma, she's doing everything with Dvarim Kedoshim. If she's going to become Tameah, so that's going to throw everything that's going to have to be burned. So she used to do multiple bedikas, nothing to do with Labayla. Even if she was single, she used to do bedikas during the course of the morning and the evening, just to make sure she was still in the status of Tahara. So Hillel says that once she starts to bleed at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you have to go back in time and say, well, Kolzman that she did a bedika, so if the last bedika was clean, so we know that there was no tumah before then. But from the time of the last bedik until now, we don't know. So therefore, we have to be chayshesh, and everything is a chashash of being tameh. That's the din of Hillel. So the Gemara explains that this was only a chumah midrabbanan. Min haTorah, you follow chazaka. Min haTorah, whatever the status quo was, it's Torah, everything is the same, until proven otherwise. But midrabbanan, Hillel made a chumah for taharas to ask everything with pekida lepekida. The chachamim, then the Mishnah quotes was the third opinion that was the majority of all the other tanoim. Hillel v'Shammai, as great as they were each a great gadol, but there were a lot of other chachamim. So the chachamim of everybody else said them. Lo k'divrei zeh v'lo k'divrei zeh, ela me'eis le'eis me'etas ayad v'pkida l'pkida, v'pkida l'pkida me'etas ayad me'eis le'eis. The chachamim said that there are two things we have to be concerned with. If the woman has done a bedika in the last few hours, so then Hillel was right. Anything that happened before the bedika, we'd often be worried about. But even if she has not done a bedika,
and then Shammai was right.
No.
Hillel said if
she did a bedika, so everything from before the bedika is okay. Everything after the bedika is a problem. Shammai said that everything until now is okay. Shammai said so until she sees blood, everything's mutter. And Hillel says no. We go back retroactively. Everything from after the last bedika is a problem. The Chachamim say that's true. That you go back to the last bedika, but you also go back to what's called the Eis L'Eis. The Eis L'Eis means the last 24 hours. Say the Chachamim, you don't have to be more concerned than 24 hours ago. So if she sees blood on Tuesday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, even if she hasn't done a bedika in the last 6 months, she hasn't done a bedika, you don't have to be more machmen than Monday at 3 o'clock. Because if she saw blood within the last 24 hours, it's possible she may not have noticed. It may have been just a little bit of a trickle. If she has already been bleeding, to say that she saw blood 3 days ago, she still hasn't noticed it. If you had a full-blown period, she still didn't notice it. That's very unlikely. So therefore, the Chacham say that for the last 24 hours, we have to be concerned. Maybe there was a little bit of blood. To be chayshish more than 24 hours, that's already too much. So that's how we pass it. Allah, like the Chachamim, that we do accept this din de rabbanan of potentially having a problem. We don't ignore it like Sham or Ligamre. But we say, if one of two things happen, we go to kula. Either meyes liyes or mepkid lepkida, either one is going to stop this chumra from going back all the way. That's how we follow. It's interesting. The Gemara said this is one of the very few machloksim between Shami and Hillel themselves. Beis Shami still had a lot of machloksim, but Shami and Hillel had very, very few, three or four, has a machlokes. How many machloksim they have? Either three or four, very, very handful of machloksim. So it's interesting to note that this machlokes, Shami and Hillel, is about such a detail of details of details of details of a din derabbanan. It means everybody agreed to everything to that point. Everyone agreed that it was Uchas Nita. Everyone agrees Tumas Nita. Everyone agrees to Chazokas. Everyone agrees to Truman. Everyone agrees to 15,000 steps that everybody agrees upon. And then the very last point they're arguing about is not even Gimel HaTorah. It's a Din Midrabanon about this nuance, this Chumr Drabanon. Should we make this Chumr Drabanon for Taras and all of the details of the detail Machlagis? That's what the Rambam in his Dominant Tashur Shnayas elaborates upon, what the Gemara says in the Sechs and Hedon, that until the days of Rishon and Hillel, so there were very, very few machlokes. And any machlokes that came up was immediately resolved. So the Rambam writes that the level of Chochmas HaTorah was so great in the previous generations that pretty much everybody came to the same conclusions that 99% of the time. You learned to the Sugyas, you went to the same Lamdas. Pretty much everyone was Mechav to the Midas Amos, everyone came to the exact same point. Everyone's really got a nuance at Machlokes and questions. Immediately they were able to resolve it. They went to the base. Well, they were able to resolve Machlokes. And that's why, until the days of Tamid Bishav Hillel, so Halacha was pretty much uniform. Everyone was pretty much doing the same thing. After the days of Bisham and Hillel, so then Rabs of Machlokes Yisrael. Then you had a lot of different shittas. So the Rambam describes, because when there was Yeridus Adaris, I mean, you're talking about the Talmid Bisham Hillel, you're talking about Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, so you're not talking about nobody's. But the Gemara said that was Yeridus Adaris, that was a little bit of a lesser stature of Torah learning. And at that point, so the machlokes became a little bit more pronounced. And what else happened is that they didn't have the ability to always paskin the shaylas because the Romans were interfering, and the Romans didn't let them convene the Sanhedrin very often. And you had a lot of unresolved machlokes. So the real bulk of unresolved machlokes that we are used to, that's what we thrive on, that's what we live on, that's what we talk about all the time. So the unresolved machlokes were really started to a great extent in the days of Tamid Shav Hillel. So there was always chilukei days, there was always pupul, and there was always discussion, there was always shaila, there was always things that came up from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, but there was a much closer, closer vision in terms of final outcome of psak, and the method of going to Beis Hamikdash always existed as a safeguard to prevent that what we have is not as that 15,000 different shaylas, different shittas in every single issue. So maybe when I make this, we'll go back to the old model of being able to observe, be able to convene a Beis and be able to finally come to resolutions of many of the shaylas.
Why is it 24 hours? But most of the things we say, wait till Shkia and then we'll give you a...
Because this is a physical day. Thing. This is not halakhic. It's a physical thing.
But also on the physical things, we say, okay, wait till Shkia until the last minute, and then we give you credit for the whole day, and you're going to get it. And here we're going for a whole 24 hours, when on the reverse side, we use the yom with light.
Because this is pure, this is biology. This is not, that when you talk about halakhic, you can say, mixus yom kakulo, 1 hour, 1 minute counting all day here. This is pure biology. We want to...
We don't do mixus yom kakulo when we do
and that's a halachic issue. That the halacha says you have to have suffer loshim as yom, you have to have a sphere of shiva nikiyim. But here we're trying to figure out, did she miss something that she's not missing? I mean, the fact that she's bleeding on Tuesday, the odds that she was bleeding on Monday.
The challenge is the Torah is not machbed on 24 hours when it comes to it's an inyan of tumah taharah. It gives you the credit of the day. And here on this issue, we're using the 24 hours.
The
Torah doesn't use 24 hours.
Because again, the issue of the Kaddish of Nikiyim, we're going to talk about this a lot. You're touching on a very lumbly shot of that. Is the goal of Shiv Nikiyim to prove that the bleeding has stopped? It's almost like a biological thing. Or is the Kaddish of Shiv Nikiyim not to prove the bleeding stopped? It's a mitzvah sphere. It's a din. You have to have a 7 days of
Shiv Nikiyim. Right.
So we're going to talk about that. When we get to Shiv Nikiyim, we're going to talk a lot about what exactly, what are you trying to accomplish with Shiv Nikiyim? Are the bedikas of Shiv Nikiyim physically oriented or the halakha? I'll just share a very, very quick shayla. That's just somebody called me just a couple of weeks ago about the following shayla. I'm actually a real shayla myself. A woman who out of period, whatever it was, and then she had certain medical complications. She didn't get to the mikveh yet. She had certain medical complications. At the end of the day, she had to have a hysterectomy. So she had to have her entire uterus removed. So now, she still hasn't gone to the mikveh. So she's still a suruf, because she was in need a month ago. She hasn't gone to the mikveh yet. And now she wants to know, how do I go about getting to the mikveh? Do I have to do bedikas of Shiva Nikiyam? What's the big deal? The doctor didn't want her to check in that area. The area was potentially infected. The doctor didn't want her to answer. Is she mechuyavus to do bedikas or not? So one could stop and ask them a question. What in the world are you doing bedikas for? There's no uterus anymore. So you're checking to see whether there's blood coming from the uterus. There's no uterus. There's no uterus. There's no blood. So if you hold that the bedikas of Shiva Nikiyam are purely physical in nature, just to prove that there's no blood, in the proof called mizeh. But if you hold that there's some kind of almost like a metaphysical halacha quote, the suffer of Shiva Nikiyam, and the sphere of Shiva Nikiyam has to be ayadei bedikas. So maybe we could conceive of a woman doing bedikas without necessarily having any reality of finding blood there. So it's a dealing puzzle. We'll talk about it a little bit later on. We'll talk about what the Rishonim seem to have an issue about this very Nakuda. So that's almost touching what we're talking about. So again, so this is all the background. We didn't even get to the background of the background yet. So we have this Machlokes Hillel, Shammai, and Chamim. What do you do under these circumstances? So now the Gemara is on the top of the 33rd page of the Kamos. The Gemara says as follows: Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Eich lefnei tashmish, eina memag kipkida. So we paskin, like the Chachamim, that any bedika that she's done in the last 24 hours will stop the clock. And anything that was, there's no concern of anything from before that. So let's say if she gets a period at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday, but she knows that she checked herself in the morning on Tuesday, so any taurus that she touched Monday night are fine. Anything that was done before the last bedika is okay. But the Rabbi Yudah Shmuel says, he puts the brakes on it, says, that's only true if it was a bedika that wasn't done right before Tashmish. If it was a bedikah that was done right before Tashmish, that doesn't count. We are one hope. Why should the bedikah before Tashmish? So the Gemara explains in the Sefer Nida that midirabbanan in the olden days when they used to be osechus v'taros when they were dealing with Dvar Torah, so Chachamim instituted that she has to check herself every morning and every night just to be on top and make sure there's nothing tummy happening. And in addition, before she's with her husband, she has to do an additional bedikah as well. Why is she doing an additional bedikah? She's not touching Taurus right now. The Gemara says that really, if you think about it, any time a couple has Tashmish ever, you should really check beforehand. It would be a good idea for her to do a bedikas before any Tashmish, just to be on the safe side, nothing to do with Taurus. But Chazal didn't institute that. They thought it was it's a little bit too much, a little bit too chomer. We're not going to make life crazy for everybody to insist that she does bedikas right before Tashmish. The Gemara says, Maseches Nida, that even if a woman wants to volunteer, so I want to be very firm, I want to do bedikah before I'm with my husband, so the Gemara frowns upon that. The Gemara says, by a little nokfo, if the husband sees his wife running to go do bedikah before Tashmish, he's going to think, oh, she must sense that she's getting a period, he's going to stay away, he's not going to want to be with her. So Chazal will tell you, it's not a good idea to do bedikahs before Tashmish. But, Bizman HaMikdash, when she was doing so many bedikahs anyway, every morning, every night, she was checking herself to make sure she was still Tahora, so Chazal instituted, you know what? Before you had Tashmish, also do it. Nobody, Bizman HaMikdash, nobody thought twice about bedikahs. Bizman HaZeh, her husband's going to see his wife just get back from the mikvah, and he sees she's running to go find a bedikah cloth. And that doesn't look right. So he's going to get all nervous. But Bizman HaMikdash, when we're doing bedikahs 15 times every day, back and forth, nobody thought twice about it. So Chazal instituted before Tashmish to bedikahs as well. So Shmuel tells us that bedikah that's done before Tashmish can't count to knock off the tumas miyaslius. That can't, you can't say that, well, anything you saw before that bedikah, everything is that's fine. Everything you touched before the bedikah is fine. Why not? My timer. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Katina, Bitok Shemahum Alabesa, because she's in a rush to do the bedikah. Because she wants to be with her husband, so she's rushing. So what's so terrible? She's in a rush. So the Gemara says, Bitok Shemahum Alabesa, Eina Machnesas Tacharon Alastokin. Because when she's in a rush, so she's apparently not doing a thorough bedikah. What does that mean, not doing a thorough bedikah? She's not inserting the bedikah cloth into the churn stocking. Churn means the whole stocking, the cracks and the crevices, means the whole area. She's just doing almost a token bedikah. She's sticking it in, pulling it out. She's not going around. She's not checking. She's not making sure what's called bedikas churn stocking. So Shmuel is almost frowning on this woman and saying, listen, you want to tell us that I did a bedikah, so therefore everything before the bedikah is tahar. No, not so simple, not so pashut. You didn't really do a good bedikah. You just did a shvacha bedikah. And what defines a shvacha bedikah? Eidem achnesas tachar nistakid. So it's this line in the Gemara, which is mamish tucked away in the first eight blot of the Sefer Nida. This has nothing to do with us, this man Azeh, this is Tumah V'Tahara, this is a chumrah that I've brought in Tumah V'Tahara. Then all of a sudden the Gemara defines for us what a tikkun is. The Gemara just told us in passing that the reason why this tikkun that this woman did was deficient was because it's Eina Mechnes as the Chorinu Stokin. So the question is, what does this Gemara mean for us in anything? So here there was a major, major machlekes in the Rishonim. We'll talk about it a little bit more next week. But a major machlekes in the Rishonim. What conclusion should we draw from this Gemara for us, Lamais, Toshinai, Zai, and Bergenfield? So half the Rishonim drew the following conclusion for this Gemara. You see that the Gemara is frowning upon this insufficient bedika, and the Gemara is defining as an insufficient bedika, as a bedika she'ena shachar nustakin. So whatever the halacha requires bedikas, i.e. for us, we don't care about bedikas for taras anymore, but we do care about bedikas for asik taras. We do care about bedikas for shindukim. The definition of a bedika in halacha is what these women are not doing. The women who are being lazy and they're in a rush to be the husbands and they're not doing a proper bedika, that standard of proper bedika is the standard that we're aiming for, and therefore the Rishonim coined the phrase, Zman Hazeh require bedikas chor nistokin. That's what half the Rishonim say. And the other half the Rishonim say, no, it's not true. There is no such halacha of bedikas. You don't need it. But the Gemara talks about it. So come to Rishonim and say, this Gemara is very, very strange. If you just go think through the Gemara for a minute, it's a very, very strange Gemara. The Chazal instituted that in the days of Taras, every woman has to do a bedikah in the morning, and every woman has to do a bedikah at night. You have to do bedikahs at the right times. And if you want to touch karbanos, you want to touch truma, you want to touch Taras, you have to make sure you're absolutely Torah. And then they added on a chumrah and said, and by the way, before you're with your husband, liyesas ace, do another bedikah also. I just did a bedikah a few hours, and it does not. Once you hold that you're doing bedikas for Taras, do bedikas for your husband as well. And Chazal knew that bedikah that they're telling, they're insisting, they were misakah for women to do before they were the husbands, Chazal just told us that they know the women are not doing it right. They just said it. Mitokshul, they say, Chazchon, stop it. They know the women are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. It's the favorish of Chazal. So the question goes, so why are you doing it for? So we're playing a game. We're instituting to do bedikah, and then we know in our minds that no one's really doing it right anyway. So what are we telling them to do bedikah for? So other Rishon said, you see from here that there is something to a bedikah that's not shochar nistokin. The Gemara never said that it's nothing, that it's worthless, that it's zero. The Gemara just said it's not up to par. It's not what we'd like. It's not the ultimate bedikah. But the Gemara never said it's a waste of time. The Gemara never said it's just like external wiping. It's a zero. The Gemara clearly accepted that it's something, although not sufficient for our purposes. But maybe it's sufficient for our purposes, for Hilchos Nida Levaila. So that becomes the background of a major machlekes, the Raivin, the Ramban, the Rashi, the major machlekes of Rishonim. What conclusion lemaisa can be drawn from this Gemara? So out of all the 76 Bavos of Nida, the only Gemara that actually defines something about a bedikah is this Gemara. It talks about bedikahs shachar nistachin versus bedikahs she'ena shachar nistachin. How that plays out for us lemaisa b'zman hazeh is a very, very serious question. Hopefully that next year we'll try to evaluate tachas lemaisa, what we're asking, what we're requesting of a woman to do. When she does a bedikah, what is her aim? What is she supposed to do? What is the bedikahs shachar nistachin practically b'zman hazeh? And just to how serious we're going to take this halacha.
I still don't catch why
That's what we get to. That's the Raivin and the Rabban and the Rash for the next one.